The work of defending true religious freedom for all has frequently been a heartbreaking task in recent years. With widespread, taxpayer-funded, administration-promoted sectarian demolition of parts of the wall safeguarding church and state from each other in this country, the small team at Interfaith Alliance, along with partner organizations, has had its hands full, and then some. No way is the change in leadership on Capitol Hill going to make things easy. In fact, forces now accustomed to outsized influence and power aren't likely to back down without a fight. For a look at what this work now looks like, I'm happy to be joined by Catherine Joseph, Director of Policy and Advocacy at Interfaith Alliance. Katie, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks, Walton. Great to be with you.
For listeners who may not be familiar with what happens when administration policies and priorities suddenly shift, I wish you would talk about how that works, if you would.
Well, we're in quite a moment of transition, even in comparison to past transitions from one administration to another. Typically, the incoming administration will keep on some of the appointed officials through the transition to ensure that policies continue smoothly. And many of the career people who have worked for the federal government and know how this is supposed to go will remain in their positions. But unfortunately, the outgoing administration really made it a priority to hollow out many of our federal agencies. So we have many acting directors, as folks are probably aware, who will no longer be in their positions under the Biden-Harris administration. And the folks who are coming in are going to have to do a tremendous amount of work to rebuild our capacity to deliver much needed assistance, care, response efforts in a moment of tremendous crisis. So there's a lot of work to be done, and we've seen a flurry of executive orders coming from the White House already since President Biden was sworn in, which tells me that they are serious about getting the work done.
Well, that's good news. Are there areas of continuity from the Obama administration, initiatives that lay dormant and are picking up where they left off?
Some familiar faces who will be picking up work in key areas that Interfaith Alliance in particular has focused on and will continue to champion. One area that I think is important for us to think about in this moment is around LGBTQ equality. This is an issue that Interfaith Alliance has a long legacy in doing work around, specifically because personal belief and the role of faith in public life has at times been used as a wedge and a means to restrict and exclude LGBTQ people from employment, from school, from housing, from other kind of key areas of everyday life. And so under the Obama administration, in the Education Department and Health and Human Services and other areas of the federal government, there was a lot of emphasis placed on protecting and advancing equal treatment under law, particularly in combating discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. Under the Trump administration, much of that work was reversed, and in many ways to very painful ends. On day one, President Biden signed an executive order making clear his stance on this issue. The very first line of one of his executive orders is that the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution includes protection on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, and that LGBTQ people are protected from discrimination in employment, in healthcare, in housing and in education, and directs the federal government to take this work seriously in implementing the Bostock decision that we saw from the Supreme Court and expanding outward to make sure that everybody receives that equal treatment.
Katie, how optimistic are you that we'll be able to avoid partisan and or ideological gridlock?
You know, Alan, I've been thinking about this, the question of unity in particular. That word has taken on a particular valence after the events at the Capitol in recent weeks. And for me, as we think about what comes next, the question is, what kind of country do we see ourselves becoming? What are our guiding principles? We can't unify. We can't move forward on these policy questions, on these ideological questions, if the compromise is leaving people behind. And so gridlock doesn't serve anyone, but we need to keep our eyes on the prize. Are we bringing everyone forward into the country that we want to build together? Or are we compromising simply for the sake of getting work done? Because we know when we compromise just to compromise, we reinforce those inequalities, that latent discrimination that may be built into existing laws. And those with less power, those with fewer resources, continue to struggle.
What are the ways listeners can get directly involved in some of this important work, in keeping these topics in the spotlight and in keeping an eye on efforts to stymie it?
Interfaith Alliance has a strong presence on Capitol Hill, and our team is really there to ensure that our legislators from whatever district they call home, whether their views comport with that of their constituents, are hearing from folks on the ground about what they care about and what they feel like they need from the federal government. Unfortunately, in the last year or so, particularly as we've been contending with the COVID crisis, with the economic crisis, and frankly, the environmental crisis that we're facing, there has been a tendency, I think, in Washington to focus on the numbers, $600 checks, $2,000 checks, one-off every month. But folks are really struggling. And it's easy for legislators to lose that very personal connection to what is happening in their hometown and their home district, unless they're hearing from folks like State of Belief listeners, like Interfaith Alliance supporters, who know their circumstances and know what they need, and call their legislators to task when they fail to meet that expectation.
What do you think the first major challenge is going to be with what Interfaith Alliance is looking at?
So before we talk about challenges, because we've had a challenging 4 years,
yes,
I can say that without reservation, I really want to take a moment to celebrate, because in the very first week of the Trump administration, we saw one of the most egregious violations of religious freedom in recent years in President Trump's Muslim ban that went into effect when planes were in the air. Folks were on their way into the United States to reunite with family, to start new jobs, to begin school. They got to the airport and were told, you are no longer welcome here because of who you are and where you come from. And thousands of Americans, whether they shared that experience or not, went to the airport and said, you are welcome here. This is your home and we will fight for you.
Yeah.
And President Biden, as soon as he took office, said the Muslim ban is a violation of religious freedom. It is discriminatory and it has no place in our immigration laws, and immediately rolled it back. So that's a reason to celebrate. It's gonna take a long time for the thousands of people who have been impacted by the ban, over the past 4 years to begin to rebuild their lives. And the time they lost during those separations is irreplaceable. But as we look ahead to what will no doubt be a challenging road around issues of religious freedom, I want to make sure that we say good riddance to the Muslim ban.
Yeah, yeah. So what, though, do you think is going to be the first battle you face?
Well, we've seen restrictions, public health restrictions around slowing the spread of coronavirus going into effect in various states, restricting opportunities to gather, to be together. And we've seen some pushback, particularly from religious institutions and organizations, making the argument that it is a violation of their religious freedom to limit religious gatherings in the midst of a pandemic. Now, I think Interfaith Alliance has been consistent in calling on faith communities to rise to the occasion. This is the time for us to set the standard, to show what it means to care for one another in preserving and supporting our communities safely from afar. But we have seen pushback under the guise of religious freedom to do just the opposite, seeking special exemptions. We know that COVID-19 doesn't distinguish between a religious gathering and a secular gathering. But these are the questions that the courts are currently mm-hmm. weighing, and I anticipate that they will continue to do so until we're at a place where the COVID pandemic is under control.
What were your feelings as you watched the inauguration of the first woman Vice President of the United States and the second Catholic President of the United States?
I will say I have been tremendously moved by the videos, the pictures of particularly little girls across the country watching Vice President Harris be sworn in, little girls raising their hand along with her on the screen or posing with the live feed of the inauguration. And for little kids of color to see themselves represented at the highest levels of office, really, it's moving and it gives me so much hope for where we go from here. Mm-hmm. I think the standout of the inauguration ceremony was the National Youth Poet Laureate, who moved me in ways that other speakers certainly were not able to. I think that young people are and will continue to lead us forward toward equity and justice. Mm. And I look forward to what we're able to build in the next 4 years.
Are you hopeful that real change for the good is possible in the weeks and months ahead?
It feels good to feel hopeful again. And I can't be the only one who's feeling that way. I think that for so long we have been operating from a very divided and, if I can even say, selfish view of politics, of I have to get my own before others can get it. And the incoming administration has been unapologetic in saying that there is more than enough justice, equal treatment, resources to go around, that everybody is deserving of protection. And our diversity is one of our greatest sources of strength. So starting from that point brings me great hope. This is when the real work begins, because we have to figure out how we put that into practice. But I have been tremendously reassured by the information, the commitments coming from the White House and hopefully Congress, once they're able to get back to some of the policy work in the coming weeks that centers on improving all of our lives, as opposed to just saying me, me, me. Yeah. We've had enough of that.
I wonder if you've thought about the words that you will say when in a conversation with Americans who opposed Joe Biden and who are feeling loss and even hopelessness at the outcome of this election. What is your response to someone like that?
I think we're all living with a lot of pain right now. And that's something that we can't be afraid to talk about. People are still feeling a real sense of loss, regardless of their politics or where they live, a loss of their sense of everyday life, of their connections with others, maybe a job, a loved one, a friend. And that feeling is not going to go away. And so as we think about what comes next, recognizing that pain is going to be really central. Mm. What we do with that pain has got to be inclusive of all of us. We can't fix the hurt that one individual or one group of people is feeling without recognizing that all of us are coming to meet this moment together. So if Joe Biden wasn't your candidate, that's okay. There are millions of other people who feel that way. But we'll work together to make sure that everyone can have their needs met and to thrive.
Catherine Joseph is Director of Policy and Advocacy at Interfaith Alliance, defending true religious freedom for all. Katie, you'll definitely have your hands full in the weeks ahead. I look forward to talking with you again very soon on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift as we celebrate 15 years of continuous broadcasting. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, and take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'll ask you also to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.